This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, and thank you for tuning in to Black Women Amplified, the podcast. Your host, Monica Wisdom Tyson, brings you downloadable conversations that matter to women around the globe. We discuss all things Black Girl Magic, amplify our voices, and transform our challenges into triumphs. Monica calls on her league of extraordinary women to push our boundaries, share their expertise, and stories of personal transformation. Welcome your host of Black Women Amplified, Monica Wisdom Tyson.
Hello, Black Women Amplified family. This is your girl, Monica Wisdom, and I have a very special guest in the building, and I can't wait to share her with you. Jane Allen joins us for another incredible conversation. And if you have heard her speak, you know that her brilliance leaves a lasting mark. A five-time best-selling author who centers Black women in every word, Jane is living the dream and she's bringing us along with her. From her beloved Black Girl series to one of my personal favorites, The Most Wonderful Time, Jane creates stories that reflect our truth, our joy, and our complexity. And she does it all with heart, depth, and humor. Her work reminds us that we are not alone, that we matter, and that our stories deserve the spotlight. And now, the Queen of Trilogies, as I call her, is back with a bold new chapter. She is teaming up with the iconic director and filmmaker Malcolm D. Lee to expand the Best Man film and television universe into the literary world through the Best Man book series, beginning with book one, The Best Man Unfinished Business. We're talking about an intimate return to Harper, Robin, and Jordan, a deeper dive into their lives, their growth, and the evolution of these characters that we have loved for decades. Today, we celebrate Jane's success and her remarkable journey from entertainment attorney to author and beyond. She is not just building a career. Jane is building a legacy. So tap in, turn it up, and give a warm Black Women Amplified welcome to the one and only Jane Allen. Hello, Jane. How are you today?
I am doing wonderful. How are you doing? Wonderfully.
How are you doing? Yes, I'm doing really great, and I'm excited to have you here. Third time is a charm. I can't believe you were on your third project, and I get to talk to you about it. I'm very excited about that.
Thank you. This is my fifth project, but yes, I am very excited for this one.
Your fifth book.
Yes.
But you had the trilogy.
Yeah.
And then you had the standalone book, and now you have the beginnings of the trilogy.
Yes, my very first co-write.
Oh my God. I can't wait to get into that because I don't know how you do that.
We can talk about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a million questions, but I know that you are on a deadline. And so we're going to get into talking about all things Jane Allen and all things Unfinished Business.
Yes.
But before we get into Unfinished Business, I want to get into your business. And please share with us a bit about your journey before you became an author.
Well, that's a long story, but I will summarize it. I started out as an attorney. I was in the music industry. And I wound up taking some unconventional, well, that was already unconventional, but I wound up making some unconventional choices because that really wasn't the right fit for me. So I wound up working with Lady Gaga during the Born This Way album release. I wound up being hired by Prince to be part of his team. I wound up coming into a cosmetics company to basically turn the business around and rebrand and reposition the product, which were excellent, excellent anti-aging products. So I wound up going to esthetician school, getting an esthetician's license and a certificate. I'm a certified esthetician, and well, not certified. I'm a licensed esthetician, I
License.
guess, but wound up taking the product line to QVC and launching that there.
Let's not skip over the fact that you're a Harvard lawyer.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. I mean, so many other things have happened since then.
I know, but we had to put that in there.
It's so long ago that I graduated. It's almost embarrassing. I'm like, oh goodness, let me just forget about that because and there's date when there are dates attached to some stuff, and the time has been a little bit longer than I feel particularly good about. Like, yeah, I went to law school. But yes, that was a wonderful experience. Completely, and actually was one of the first opportunities for me to have a purpose behind writing something creatively. I was supposed to write a thesis to graduate from law school that was supposed to be a research paper, and I was able to do a screenplay. So that was the first time where creative writing actually had a substantive requirement to it. It was one of my graduation requirements, and my thesis advisor, had benchmarks that I had to meet for the screenplay I wrote to be acceptable, but it did qualify to graduate from Harvard Law. So very few people, I think, know that. And then after the cosmetics company, I'd started writing books in earnest. It felt like my offer back to people. I've been on this kind of wild ride of a life, and I'm very grateful for it. And it has taught me so much that I think maybe uncommon lessons in a way. And so I felt like my books would be my offering back to my community, to people who, I felt like could benefit from some of the things that not necessarily the experience itself, but the takeaways, after I processed it and kind of thought, what did this experience teach me? And what do I have to share? That's what motivated me to start writing books.
So you have had, like you said, you've taken a journey through many careers and have excelled in all of them.
Yes.
when like you were, working at a burger joint and then you started writing books. I mean, you're working with icons like Prince and Lady Gaga, and you're graduating from Harvard and you're planting the seeds of your future at the university, at this top university. But you did pivot in many different directions that are not connected to one another specifically. So, because a lot of Black women we're in this era where there's a lot of pivot, whether it's forced or choice, what is your process of going into a different career? And how do you pick where you're going? Or does it just happen and you do the make the best of it? Or are you very intentional of your next step?
It's so funny that you're asking me this because I'm actually working on a nonfiction project right now, kind of about this, about not just necessarily the pivot, but having to pick a new direction and do that successfully when things don't go the way that you expect. And I'm very intentional. I do actually have a process, and I've been through so many situations where I've had to rethink, pick up pieces from opportunities that didn't work out the way that I thought, that it's clear for me exactly what to do. And I think the bottom line of it, the first step for me always is having a clear vision and knowing where do I want to go. And the question that I ask myself that I think is difficult for a lot of people to even approach, strangely enough, is what do you want? And asking myself, what do I want? Or someone asking them, I ask people all the time, what do you want? You'd be shocked, or maybe not, but it's surprising to me every time that people can't answer that question. So it takes a lot of work to actually know that for yourself. What do I want right now? And it doesn't have to be what you're going to want in 10 years. It doesn't have to be what you wanted yesterday. It may change next week. But just getting pinning down what it is that you want right now is, to me, the first step in any kind of pivot or picking up the pieces from something that didn't go as expected, for sure.
So, what are some of the missteps that you made when you were going in different directions?
It's hard to call anything a misstep because I feel like it has worked out. But I think that things didn't go as expected many, many times when there were opportunities that I thought were going to be more stable. Like I worked in startups for many jobs. I was in startups for many years and there was so much instability that I had not accounted for. And I thought, oh, okay, this is well funded, so this is going to go well. But that doesn't necessarily mean, well funded does not necessarily mean that there's a lot of runway. You can spend a lot of money in a year with a startup, or it doesn't necessarily mean that your decisions and your what you would do is what the management decides to do. And so sometimes you're just in this unstable situation and you're also at the mercy of someone else's choices and decisions. So for me, one of the earliest lessons I learned was to always have my own thing going, always. So no matter what I was doing for someone else, never lose sight of what my own mission was and to always have my own project. So that was a mistake I made early on that I rectified early on and have not deviated from since.
Oh, hence you working on a manuscript.
At all times, at all
At all
times.
times. So talk to us about, I find it fascinating how in the beginning of you said you wrote books.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. All so that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes, subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Did you write a book before the Black Girl Magic trilogy? I'm calling it the Black Girl Magic
Oh,
trilogy,
yeah,
but I don't
okay.
think.
I'd written nonfiction books. I wrote about social media. I wrote about time management. Some of the books I published, some of them I didn't. I was just teaching myself how to write books. So the best way to learn is to do. And so I just set it. First book I wrote in my office because I had to be at work. But needed to do something else with my brain. And so in my downtime, I would just, start working on a manuscript and it well, to make sure I could get to a book length for manuscript and encapsulate a full idea. It was nonfiction. I never published that book, but I printed, I wrote it. I had it in manuscript layout, publishing layout. I got it printed, everything. And I just gave copies away to people because I just wanted to prove to myself that what my thought was about what I could do and couldn't do, because then at that time my belief was that I could not write a book, believe it or not. And so I just wanted to test that belief. And so the low stakes version of that was to see if I could write a book, which I did, and then get it printed. And I didn't have to publish it, but I gave it away to people and they thought it was pretty good,
They just tapped me on my shoulder and said, "Good job."
It was pretty good. It was worth free 99.
Now you have a dynamic way of writing characters, and you have two dynamic main characters in your Black Girls Must series, the trilogy, and as well as the book that I'm completely in love with.
Oh, the most wonderful time.
The Most Wonderful Time, and I'm waiting on this to become at least a duel. Because I need to know what happens to Ramona and Jay.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
So Tabitha Walker is a dynamic woman, as well as Ramona Tucker. How did you go into writing their worlds? And why was it important to tell their stories?
Well, with Black Girls Must Have Gossy, which is the first book in the Black Girls trilogy, Black Girls Must Be Magic and Black Girls Must Have It All, I wanted to celebrate Black women. That was my first goal, first and foremost. And I wanted to celebrate us for all of the aspects of who we are, including and especially the aspects that people would say societally are ugly, not, you know, less than or damaged or whatever. I wanted to celebrate and highlight all of it and all of us. And so with Tabby, she is a character that allowed me to do that. And I'm really grateful to Tabby because I put her through a lot of horrible things. And then, but ultimately, you know, it's all about the happy ending. And I don't write unresolved trauma, you know, and I think the happy ending, when I say it's all about the happy ending, I mean the happiest ending for that character, not like a conventional happy ending where it's just kind of formulaic, like this is how it's supposed to go. My character's happy endings may not look like that, because for them, what their happy ending, like the best thing for them may not be getting the guy and the marriage and the whatever, that like that their happy ending might be something completely different, but it's what they need or they most want. So, or that's the adventure that they should be on, you know, for now. So Tabby was a character that allowed me to show a lot of things about Black women that I don't feel like we get to show. Like, she's very uncertain about a lot of things. She doesn't have it all together. She kind of falls apart sometimes. She's flawed in a lot of ways that we don't get permission to be as Black women in society. And so I wanted to give us that and give her the space and support to be all of that and not have it be too much, not have it be, you know, her downfall or demise, you know, that she can build from there and be imperfect and still win. And so that was really important to me to show with Tabby Walker and her story with the Black throughout the trilogy, because I mean it's a saga. It's a long journey for Tabby. And then for Ramona Tucker, same kind of thing, but a different kind of woman. Not Ramona had it all together. She was very much had it all together, but it all falls apart. And then she has to find another version of having it together that is more authentic to herself. You know, once she did all the things she was supposed to do, and then that didn't really come together in the way that she thought, getting outside of not just those boxes and the box, but just getting outside of her space, of her world, of her, you know, everything that she's known, to be presented with something completely new and being able to find herself accepted in a new space, in a new way. I wanted to show that. I mean, I just put her in all kinds of new situations. And I think she's a character that anybody should be able to live through, but Black women in particular, I love the idea of being able to put them in Ramona's shoes and put them in those spaces and be loved on in that way, and to be embraced by the ocean in that way, and to, you know, find the way forward in the way that she does. I love Ramona Tucker as a character. I love her journey. I was so happy with how that book came out. I didn't know how it was going to go, but I just love it. I love it.
Yeah, I loved it too. And it was the first time I had heard about the Black Surfing Organization.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I loved how all the research that you did to make sure it rang true.
Yes.
So that when they read it, they saw themselves. And it defied the myths of Black folks don't swim. We do swim.
We do. We do.
And
have always.
And have always. And have always. Now you are walking into this new space. You build worlds, but now you're walking into the Best Man galaxy.
Right.
Like, and not only is it a galaxy, but it's a 25-year legacy.
Yes.
And how were you able to walk into that space? And what was the phone call that you got for the invitation?
Well, those are two different questions. The first was that the outreach, Malcolm D. Lee, the writer-director, creator of The Best Man, his agent reached out to me and asked if I might be interested in writing The Best Man books. I was like, what? So I didn't even think it was, I was like, of course, yes, this is amazing. I couldn't even imagine something better for me in particular, but also just as a project And so I said it to my agent. I was like, "Is this real? Can you bring it down?" And
Is this AI or is this real?
no, somebody playing with me. Like, does AI know me too well? So yeah, so she's like, "Yeah, eventually it came to a point where I had a conversation with Malcolm. We really had a good opportunity to speak, and I was very excited about it. And then in subsequent conversation, because we kind of just talked through what the project would be and what his expectations were, or like what was he trying to create. And he has said that the question I asked him, I think in his second call, I was just thinking through this, and I was like, okay, this is gonna be a huge undertaking. It's gonna be so challenging. I think people don't realize when you have existing characters with a 25-year history that everybody knows these characters. The first opportunity to meet these characters was on screen, not in on the page. And then you need to give people the same cinematic value or higher with already established characters in a book. Like, this is, I mean, if you're like Final Jeopardy, like like the hardest thing you could possibly imagine doing, this would be it. Like, epic soundtrack, best man circa 1999, epic soundtrack, amazing, gorgeous actors, incredible screenwriting performances, all of it immaculate quality and excellence. And now we have to create that experience at that level for in a reader's mind with just black and white words on a page. Are you serious?
And not only that, these are characters we grew up with. Like
Right.
we chronologically grew up with them. They were always at the same stage of life
Right.
we were in.
Everybody knows. So I was just like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so challenging. I'm here for it. But the one question that I had for him, I was like, do you want to win? And he was like, what? He was a little taken, but he was like, well, yeah, I want to win, and that, but the question that I was asking him was like, are you going to go all in with me? Because I was like, I just knew this was going to require an all-in approach. Like, it wasn't going to be something that we could halfway do, or just like kind of have at it and see how it goes. Like, it would have to go well, and we could do by any means necessary kind of way, and I just knew what that was going to take. And so I knew I would go all the way, and I just wanted to hear from him that was what he was anticipating this would be. And so that was what we did. I mean, we went all in. We worked together for a year. We worked so intensively on this project. And what I will say for sure, as I've gotten to know him, is that he has been the custodian of excellence for this franchise for 25 years, unwaveringly, and nothing has changed about what this book is in continuation of that standard. But to really get to work with somebody whose custodianship is so immaculate and whose standard of excellence is so high and so immaculate, for me as a writer, that's a dream. And beyond having the opportunity to write cinematically and work and think, more cinematically, and to think how a director would think, and to write into that space, and to try to craft this as an experience for somebody who might even not be a reader, but who might be a screen, who's a screen first person, but to kind of bring them into this kind of way of experiencing, it's absolutely been incredible. So I feel so fortunate. I'm so happy that people are enjoying the work. I hope people understand how challenging it was.
Listen, let me
But
say
we had to
this.
come through for the folks.
You did. And you did, because let me tell you, I was like, ooh, how are they going to do that? Because they're already fully formed people. It's like having to go back to the beginning again with fully formed people. That you can't take them back to being a baby.
Right.
You can't take them back to those childhood days or those young college days when
Right.
we first met them.
Right.
As silly young people, just all the things. And then the TV show, you see them getting married. And now in the book, their kids are in college. So you get to see a full scope of them. And then how do you take them to three more book, three books? But if anybody can do it, it's the queen of trilogies.
That's hilarious. Well, you know what? The interesting thing about this and those characters, and I was thinking about this, they're very, very successful people in their midlife, in their mid-50s. I mean, you have Jordan, who was the vice chairman of MSNBC. So even just that position, what that world looks like, what that realistically looks like, there's just certain things that you have to kind of know, or to be able to depict somebody who's living this life experience in that world and in that space. And these are, wildly successful. They're very mature people. So when you're trying to continue their journey authentically, you really have to pull from a place. So I'm glad you asked kind of what was my career like before writing, because there were just certain things that thankfully we could pull from to depict where these people would be, that is a progression from what you've already seen. But that's very, you've got a professional all-star, a pro bowler in Lance Sullivan, and he's living life after the NFL, so you have to really bring what this type of person would really realistically be like, and what their maturity and their expectations, and to construct a world around them. And Harper Stewart won the Pulitzer. These are not just, this is not
Regular
like,
folk.
yeah, exactly. And he's 50 plus, so there's a certain level of maturity and evolution that really has to be reached for, and the levels of Black excellence that we had to strive for here and bring into the pages was kind of epic. So that there was a lot that went into it for sure.
Did you know that Black Women Amplified has a private membership? Yes. And I am inviting you to become a founding member of the Queen's Clubhouse, a sanctuary for Black women to connect, grow, and shine. From behind-the-scenes conversations to our Crown Book Club, this is a space for you to take off your cape, recharge, and be celebrated. It takes place on Patreon. So please visit queen.blackwomenamplified.com to learn more and to join. And I can tell, I mean, I can't imagine, you're both coming from two different worlds, you and Malcolm Lee. He's a filmmaker and you're a writer. How did you connect those elements together? Because he writes from the bigger picture and you go into the details of each person and you're creating their whole world. How did that connect and what was that process like?
That's a really great question. We had a lot of conversations to start, and the conversations were about life, about understanding from a fundamental human perspective certain circumstances that, either we saw on the screen or that has been part of the story that has unfolded to this point, or some of the things that we've seen from some of the characters. So then that's an opportunity to ask more questions and kind of excavate more story, create more story, create more backstory, blossom the story a little bit more than what you get to do on screen. And so that was just in conversation and thinking through from a human perspective and what we know about humanity, what we can pull from the character. And Malcolm is really a repository of, he knows these characters so well. So to be able to ask him, well, why would this person think this? Or why would they say that? Or any number of things that were important to the story, or what's the story behind this? We need to tell that story. So we worked really well together in that way because he had that information available. He knows those characters inside and out, and can voice them. And funny thing was, when we first started, because I was a little panicked, because I, you know, it's so funny naturally. Like, the movies are so funny, and that there's just a natural humor. And I was worried. I was like, well, how much of what we saw on screen was improv? So I'm like, how are we going to be able to? He's like, no, that was all on the page. He's like, those are masterful performances. He's like, but that was all on the page. I was like, it was. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. And then when
Have you had him send you the screenplay?
No, we didn't need the screenplay, but in writing the manuscript, it was amazing to see the dialogue take shape. Because, and as a writer, when you're writing dialogue in the best, highest form of dialogue, and then highest standard of excellence, you do not need quotations, you do not need dialogue tags, you do not need to say who said it. you should be able to know just from the words alone. That's the highest standard of dialogue. And see, for me at least, I don't know, people can feel free to disagree, but that's how I look at it. And when I saw the dialogue take shape, or sometimes I would, see Malcolm like add some dialogue in or see something, it was so clearly embodied in just those words, the character's voice. It was so clear. And you'll see in the book, which has gone through rounds and rounds and rounds of editing and refinement, but even just the raw writing in the manuscript, you could hear the characters because he's just so attuned in to them and their voices.
Yes, when I was reading it, I'm a visual person, and so I could visualize Harper. I'm like, oh yeah, that's him, or Robin. I'm like, yeah, she's always a little apprehensive about life. And then Jordan, yep, that's her. Like when she was in the meeting and she was in her head, like, I'm Jordan MF and Armstrong. I said, yep, that's her.
Right. But it's like, it's great to be able to be in their heads too, and like to really get to know them. I just feel like it's such a great hang with these people where it just feels like you're really there with them. So as a fan of the movies, if you are, if somebody is, I am, and I loved reading the book. I was so excited to be done with it, so I go back and read it. So as many times as I've read it in editing, I'm not sick of it. I started reading it again, and I was listening to the audiobook. I was like, I want to listen. So
Who
like,
read the
I want to read
audiobook?
it. Oh, there's three. It's Don't Give
Oh,
Me
they
the
got
Mind.
actors.
There's three voice actors.
Actors.
Jacoby Dia, who everybody loves. It's like the male voice actor that everybody loves him.
Okay.
And I don't have the names in front of me, but there are three phenomenal voice actors. I've heard nothing but rave reviews.
I love when actors read the audiobook as opposed to the author reading it
Oh,
because they
yeah.
bring so much. The first book I read that was audiobook was Zora Neale Hurston's book, and Ruby Dee was reading it.
Oh yeah.
And she created all the characters. I was like, oh, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, it's its own art form. I mean, I have so much reverence for the audiobook and the readers and the format. I couldn't, people ask me, are you gonna do your audiobook? I'm like, no. When you really have a strong character, when you really have a strong plot, it will take on a life of its own because you just know as an author that it almost becomes like a parallel reality where you're just the scribe, you're just observing it. You kind of can see how it would take shape, and what you want it to be is not the truth. So, not the truth of it. So there were a lot of changes that happened in the course of writing that just, as we realized it as the story was unfolding, oh no, this is the authentic way. So what you read is the most authentic truth that we could find for this story, for this book.
And done beautifully. Now, in this story, we get to see Robin and Ghana, and Jordan has moved on to nestled in Malibu, and Harper is trying to figure Harper out as he's always doing. But I want to talk a little bit about Robin and Jordan. They both took the time to choose themselves. I might have been the only person that was happy to see Robin leave Harper and go live her life. Think I was the only person who said, yes,
We met
girl.
like five other people on book tour who also felt
I was like, go, please
that
save yourself. But
way.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the process of choosing yourself and how important was that in weaving that into this story.
Well, I think you're seeing two different versions of that from two very different women. I think you're seeing that from Jordan and Jordan's version of that, and I think you're seeing it from Robin and Robin's version of that. And something very interesting has come up in the conversations we've had with readers, where a lot of people can relate to Jordan's version of choosing herself, even though it seems unconventional, because Jordan quit her job as the vice chair of MSNBC, and nobody forced her to do that. She chose herself and her health, and she walked away. That is, extreme, and that is, it's a controversial type of decision, but most people can relate to that and understand that, and maybe because the health component was part of it. But what we've heard from readers about Robin's journey is very, very different, and most people just haven't. Real, she gets under people's skin, and in particular, Black women. And so it's interesting to see that version of choosing yourself and why, and ask ourselves, well, why does this one this unconventional version bother us so much? This is, arguably nothing went wrong. Harper still sees his daughter. She's living her best life in Ghana. She chose to leave the country because it wasn't serving her to be here. She made a choice for her daughter that she thought was the best one for both of them. And why did that bother us? Why does that bother us so much? And what about Robin do we get, gets under our skin? And what do we feel like she should be? And it made me think about Tabby a lot because there were conversations I have with readers about Tabby, and she got under people's skin because, we don't get that opportunity to be supported in being uncertain. We don't get that opportunity to think things are going to be okay if we don't have it all figured out. And so when we see somebody like that, it just triggers our panic button. And so, I think that Robin's journey in particular, and Jordan's also, but the part of Robin's journey that might get under people's skin, I think it's a very good opportunity for conversation.
Well, it gets very, he's a good man, Savannah. Like, you should just stay. You have this successful man. He's got all the accoutrement of this Black excellence man. And you walk away from it all to go live in, what people perceive as a third world country. But they don't know the beauty and the elegance of being in Accra and all the things. So yeah, I get that. But it is two very different journeys. But I was cheering for Robin. I was like, yes, go, bye.
You can start a support group of people who feel similarly, and there would be like five people at your meeting.
There's a whole mass exodus of Black women leaving the country now.
I know, but I think that people felt have been feeling a way about Robin. And I was like, okay, we're gonna see. But it's been interesting to I'm here for that conversation because I always want to know. Because I just remember with Tabby, and she it was just interesting to sit in book clubs and hear people talk about, like, I don't know, she just gets on my nerves. I'm like, well, what about it? I'm like, do we have the grace as Black women in particular to not have it figured out? To be messy, because especially at that time, I think we're having more conversations about mental health now. I think there's more, this is 8 years later or 7 years later, but at that time, I think we were still really scratching, at the surface of getting to the conversations around personal well-being and decision making that honors well-being over all the supposed tos.
And Jordan was leaving a job. So everybody has that, I can't wait to quit this job. But then you're leaving a relationship. That's a different conversation.
Yeah, and you're taking your child away from her dad and all of those pieces to it also.
One thing I can say is unfinished business is grown people's business because there were some unexpected grown moments. So far, I've gotten through two. I'm like, oh my God, I'm just
It's
halfway through this
spicy.
book.
It's
And
spicy.
I just have one question. Was there a safe word when you were writing the copy?
There was no holds barred in writing the copy. I mean, there were moments where we had to dial it back a little bit, but we really wanted to. It's grown people, and I think it's important to see grown people being grown. I mean, otherwise it's just inauthentic. And what I love about in particular, the steamy, intimate moments that you see in the book, they're really meant to be character explorations in the same vein as dialogue, in the same vein as seeing what decisions they make in any other kind of circumstance. So it's really meant to be kind of impactful characterization opportunity where you get to learn something about this character. I mean, yes, it's an intimate moment. It's steamy, it's cheeky, it's body. It's fun, but it's also very much that character in that moment. You're learning a lot, or those characters, or what's happening. So it's really integral to the story. It is part of the plot. There is no gratuitous nudity.
I was like, no, wait a minute. We should have a warning just so I can have my glass of wine ready.
Whatever else you need, your glass of wine, whatever you need. But yeah, just, I mean, now if you see this book series, just have your picnic basket ready.
But the way that it's written is very beautiful.
Thank you.
I can't think of the word now, but it's just very beautifully written. And it's just a natural progression. And the one thing I loved about this writing is you know, Harper in the TV series, he wasn't around a lot. And the only time you get to see him with emotion is if he's angry or he's doing something he has no business doing. So to hear his inner world is great, because now you get to understand him better and you get to see his process of why he makes the decisions that he makes. So I think that's important, that we get to see the inner world of Black men, because that's where this franchise started, was with the friends, the guys.
Exactly. You know,
and it's centered around Black men. And I'm happy that we're getting back to that, adding that element back in.
Yeah. And I've heard Malcolm say this numerous times, that, you know, the original impetus was to write a story about Black male friendship and to center, you know, Black excellence from a male perspective, you know, and friendship in the storytelling. And I love that this book does that. I love the conversations that I think it's allowing men to have. And I love the growth trajectory that we're able to see from a very intimate perspective, very authentic. And what is great about having polarity in the writing team is that there are checks to what you would assume about the opposite sex. Like, there's, you can't just go and make up from a character perspective what you think will happen. You kind of have to have not integrity, because I think you have integrity in writing, but when there's somebody that's actually sitting right there and you have to get this by them and get their buy-in for it, that's a whole nother level of writing. So I think what you see here, there's a lot of energy that's charged into the words themselves and into the book that has to do with really bringing the fullness of the perspective and having it butt heads with the fullness of, you know, the other perspective, the female perspective, and having it butt heads with the fullness of the male perspective in the writing. So I think that energy is in the book. And I really do love that about this. And I think it makes it more authentic read. Absolutely.
Oh, definitely. You can totally, that's the experience that I had of
yeah.
it. You could hear both sides of the conversation.
Yeah.
Just the way you all organize, the way the book is organized through the chapters. It's like, okay, this is going on. Well, what is she thinking? What is he thinking? So we get the full breadth of their thoughts, which I thought was just genius.
Oh, thank you.
Because it doesn't make you wonder, like, what does he think about this moment? And you get to experience what they both think, especially in that special moment.
Yes.
I'm like, whoa.
Those special moments.
So we do get a lot of questions answered. Now, I just want to talk, before we get back into the Jane Allen universe, I just want to ask one question, because there's a lot of conversation around the diaspora. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I thought was beautiful in this book is that we explore the diaspora through this story. We get to go to the Caribbean and we meet Jasmine. And then now we're on the continent. So we go from the Caribbean to the continent. So we get into these different cultures outside of Black American culture. How important is it for us as Black Americans to explore other cultures that's within our lineage?
Well, I personally think it's very important to know where you came from and to know what you're connected to, because we live in a society that lies to us so much about who we are. And so I think you have to find out for yourself. And that's the way to do it. So to see the realities of what it means to be of African descent from all the true variations of it, I think it's very important to see for yourself, because you're being told a story about it one way or another. So you might as well go get the truth so that you don't believe, you know, just believe what you're being told, both directly and indirectly and subconsciously. So I think that's very, very important. And when we decided to embody Ghana and Accra in the book, it was very important to go there and breathe the air and walk the soil, eat the food, hear the people, live in the energy of the place. And so Malcolm went and did a research trip where he did just that. You know, he was there. He did the thing. That's why it's so alive. And when you read and you read about the sections about in Ghana, the food, I mean, you should be able to taste it. And I think for us, we don't always get to travel. We don't all have passports. We don't all have the disposable income. So you're gonna go. Even if you don't get to go physically, you're gonna go, and it you can trust the experience of it. You will go in the book, and we can do that as writers and authors. And I love that about this job is that you can go. Even if you can't go right now, I can take you in your mind. And if you can go in your mind, you can go in your body. Your body will follow. So we can deliver that to people through the characterization of the locale, and the because Ghana really does become kind of a character in the book. And so being able to present that, maybe we'll introduce the idea, oh, we should travel. We should go see this for ourselves. Or I want it, I feel like I've been, and maybe I should go. Or just the idea that we can, that's important. So I think hopefully, if this is a person's first trip to to Accra and the pages of a book, I've heard it's not the first time I've heard that, that people's first trip somewhere is in the pages of a book. So I hope that this delivers that for sure.
Yeah, I was the kid watching National Geographic, so I went to all these places just
Exactly.
through it. And it was beautiful because I've been to Accra in Ghana. So I was like, oh, I know that place. I know that beach. I know, so it felt like I didn't realize he had been there, but it just felt it was me walking back through that trip
Oh, I
and how
love that.
important it is. And then what you say is you do have to go see it for yourself because I remember going, being in a black girl, American black girl in my 20s, well, my early 30s, I should say, and having all these preconceived notions about what life on the continent was, and then getting there and like, they lied.
Right. Exactly.
Like,
Right.
this is a big old lie.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So I appreciate that being, like you said, a new character. Ghana being a new character, I think it's very important and I think it's beautiful. Now let's get back into the Jane Allen universe.
Yes.
What do you have going on? Is Black Girls Must still going to the small screen?
Yes, it's still in development. But that development is just such a process. So yes, I mean it's being worked on. And in the meantime, I have a new manuscript I'm cooking up that I'm
You say
very
that every
excited
time we kind
about.
of like I'm, and it's like, damn.
I am doing something completely outside the box for me, but I wanted to keep growing, and I'm like, I want to keep giving people something, different, and also having the opportunity to grow myself and to just push the boundaries, like not get too comfortable. So I am doing a book about shapeshifters, black shapeshifters.
You know, in my head, I was like, I hope it's sci-fi. I
Oh,
hope it's sci-fi.
it's sci-fi. It's
Because
sci-fi.
I'm a sci-fi girl.
Yes, think Octavia Butler. Think with a dash of Anne Rice, with a dash of Toni Morrison, with a dash of True Blood, HBO. That all together. Shake it up in a martini shaker and pour it into a chilled glass. That's what we do when.
Bloody Mary, baby.
Yes, it's gonna be a Bloody Mary for sure. But yeah, so I'm like, I'm really excited about how this is shaping up. There's a romance subplot, but it's really about a woman coming into her own, as I always am writing about.
As we are all trying to
Right,
do.
exactly. Which has basically been all that I've written about since I've ever started writing. So.
Listen, the Black woman story is so many stories, and there are very few people writing about it in a dynamic way. We have one story that's always told, but then all of us that live on outside of that story, our stories are not told. So I appreciate that you explore the many facets of Black women in all of your writings.
Thank
Your
you.
fifth book, your sixth book, your 10th book.
I know. I have a whole li a laundry list of book concepts that I'm trying to work through one by one. So I'm excited about this one, though.
I'm excited for you. I can't wait to read that one. So I am so grateful for your time. I know that
Thank
you have a
you.
lot to do. It is always a pleasure speaking to you. How can people stay in touch with you and to follow your journey?
Well, the best way to keep in touch is I'm on Instagram at Jane Allen Writes. I have a mailing list. Please join my mailing list. I'm on Substack. I think that's the best way. But I have not been the best with my mailing list. I just had to say that, but join the mailing list. I'm going to get better and I will be putting my updates there. And I have a new podcast that I do. We are 32 episodes in. So a lot of times that's the easiest way for me to disseminate something. I will talk about whatever I have going on. So it's called We Are Out of Office. And I do it with a co-host, my co-host, Nikki T. She's a film producer, a film and television producer. And we talk about pop culture and life and our
Y'all are funny.
projects. Oh,
Y'all are
you've heard?
funny.
Okay.
Y'all are funny.
Well,
Yes.
thank you.
I love the different segments. I love the
Oh, okay.
conversation.
Well,
And it's
okay. You've
just
heard
like, yeah, I listened to it. I saw you all on TikTok and I was like, she has a podcast?
Oh, yes.
Spotify.
Well, it's to me that often is the easiest way to, drop, okay, this is what's going on or this is news, and then having someone that I'm able to do it with, it makes it so much easier. It's much less of a lift. So I think those places are the best places to follow on Instagram at Jane Ellen Writes, on Substack probably, but most frequently is We Are Out of Office because we have an episode every week. So I'll be talking about stuff.
Jesus take the wheel is my favorite section.
Oh yeah. Jesus take the wheel. Oh goodness. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We've been having a lot of fun with it.
It's really great. So again, I want to thank you for your time. I can always talk to you forever.
Well, you asked such great questions.
I have so many questions.
We'll do it again.
Definitely, definitely. But I want people to read the book and thank you, one, for saying yes to this project because the TV show was not enough. The business was not finished. The
The business is still not finished, so that's good.
business is still not finished. We still have two more books. Final question, what is the second book going to focus on? I hope it's Lance.
Yes. That's yes. Yes.
Because I need to see the wedding. I didn't get to see the wedding.
Well, stay tuned because the second, yes, Malcolm has dropped that dime that Lance will be part of the focus of the second book and
I'm
his new
excited
bride
about that.
Jasmine. So my dog has made an appearance in
Okay.
that.
Well, I would say goodbye and thank you again and happy writing.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Will see you again. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Black Women Amplified. We hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to subscribe and log on to blackwomenamplified.com for more information. Keep shining.